हरिः सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So page one. All this was based on Brahman's aspect of immanence, his quality of pervading and sustaining every realm and facet of creation, from the Adi-Daiva, Adi-Bhuta to the Adi-Atma.
When you say about the hermeneutics, so when the other schools, they try to give their own hermeneutics, do they actually try to change the tatpara linga of the book itself?
No, it's just that it means hermeneutics means what you're going to interpret.
Yeah.
Right? So then you have the position that they're going to, what's at the beginning and the end of the book, they'll, you know, make points on that, what's repeated, what's given, you know, excellence and like that. Just like here, we've been looking at the superior position of Brahman, right? But they'll take that excellence and try to put that onto the jiva or onto Prakriti. So it's the same thing. See, that Tatparya Linga is also known as Mimamsa. Right? So it just means that the position of, you know, how to understand what's the important aspects, so what's the actual subject matter. Right? So then, but then those words, how they'll interpret and all that, then that will be their specific. But this is the areas in which you discuss, just like, let's say, logic, it has its natural grammar, so everybody follows that. But then within that, how they use it, what is their focus, you know what I'm saying? Somebody wants Siddhanta, somebody just wants to win the argument, somebody wants to make sure the other person doesn't win the argument. That will be the difference in the schools. Right? So when it says Brahman, does that mean Brahman, or does that mean the jiva? Does that mean like that? Does that make sense? So this Adi-Atmic, Adi-Daivic, and Adi-Bhautic, that's also very important aspects, because you're going to have the individual that's there, you're going to have the higher powers that are controlling that, and then you're going to have what's in between. So those aspects are also very important when you're dealing with the creation. Okay, Brahman is the Yantayami, indwelling spirit, of the world of matter and souls. The description of various Adi-Daivic, Adi-Bhutic, Bhuta and Adi-Atmic principles are able to denote their Antayami in a deeper sense, insofar as their own natures, powers, and functions are all derived from the Antayami within. Footnote 1. Adi-Daivic terms include Indra and Agni. Adi-Bhautic terms refer to Akash, Prithvi, Apa, Tejas, etc. Adi-Atmic refers to the soul, Jiva, and its means of enjoyment, the body and senses. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're meaning here. So when it says Adi-Daivic, then it's showing that, like we remember before, there was the aspect of Indra. So Indra is saying, worship me to attain the supreme. What he was meaning is, who is making Indra Indra? Right? It's the potency of the Supreme Lord. So that aspect, being within Indra, that's the part that's worshipable. Indra himself, okay, is respected as a anga of the Lord's universal management, but it's actually the Lord's universal management, the potency of that that's coming from the Super Soul, that makes him respectable. Right? So therefore, the Adi-Daivic term, does it mean Indra? Does it mean the Supreme? Does it mean like this? Does that make sense? And then the adibhautic, then, how you say, the other things that are around us, so akash, priti, apa, tejas, all these different things that are there that we work with, right? That's then going to be, are those things the supreme, or are they us, or is that prakriti? Right? And then of course, then the adiatmic, the soul, so generally they take it like that, but sometimes they're saying this adiatmic, the soul, or the supreme soul, is actually Antayami, because he's the one that's the soul of souls. So you have to see the context. How, what is emphasized? What is glorified? Right? What is brought to the, what is repeated? All these different aspects. And then all that based on what's the opening and closing of the literature itself. So since it's about Brahman, then, and everything coming from Brahman, then we can understand that the interpretation of these specialties has to be Brahman, right? So it has to be the supreme. Does that make sense? Okay. The Sutrakara thus establishes samanvaya, integration in Brahman, by showing the plenary and maximum sense of each term and description. Right. So, what is part of the Lord as Brahman, but that aspect of Brahman that's in everything? It means Brahman's in everything, but we're studying a particular aspect of where Brahman is in something. You know, as in the case of Indra or Akash. He's in everything, but we're just studying it in relationship to a particular function. Right? Because it has to be based on Shastra. That's the third thing, Shastra Yona Tvat. So, according to Shastra, then that's how we will interpret. Right? And so everything's coming from the Lord. Everything's about Brahman coming from there, and Shastra is also coming from the Lord. So that explains everything. So based on that, then they have to have a discussion on what is the aspect of the Lord that's being presented. Because otherwise, then by interpretation, we'll take it off into something else. Right? And that something else is always for our benefit. Right? Well, you know, what's the point of making all this effort if you're not going to benefit, right? Yeah.
Usually there are two meanings. That's what they explain, huh? Like the ordinary meaning and the transcendental.
But there's also the context, because it's discussing transcendence, so it's there. So what it is that they're taking the ordinary usage of the word and then using it to their advantage, the impersonalists. Right, so, but because it's Vedanta Sutra, because it's Upanishads, it won't be about ordinary meanings. It will be about the transcendental. So that's what we mean, is that's the Mimamsa by the context. Remember, he says that, okay, in this verse it may look like this, but the verse before it and the verse after it, then they're showing about the greatness of Brahman. So that's one of the points of Mimamsa, is what's made out to be special, or what's emphasized, or what's, you know, great.
Just, it doesn't make sense logically if we follow that thing, that how Mayavadis can say that Akash is Jiva and Brahman is also Jiva. That's their transcendental meaning.
No, but the point is what is the purpose of their transcendental interpretation?
To be God.
So therefore, since that's the goal, then you naturally twist. That's why you'll see in anything material, then the presentations are always contradictory. Because in one sense, it looks like it's this, but then in the other sense, we'll take the exact opposite. Now, that something has a contradictory elements, that's all right if it's reconciled in the Lord. Because he is the source of all everything, therefore everything that is different from each other is also coming from him. So all contradictions are resolved in him. But when we're trying to put it on Prakriti or the Jiva, those inconsistencies don't match. Therefore it doesn't work. So when you put it in line with the Lord, then everything fits. Does that make sense? So that's what I'm saying, is that you're showing the aspect of, let's say, Akash, in the specifics of how that's the Lord, but at the same time is in the greater elements of that, how it's the Lord because of its unlimited nature. Right? So the Jiva doesn't have that. He wants to be the unlimited, but how do you stretch 1/10,000th the tip of the hair to be unlimited? That might hurt. Right? You know. And who's going to do that? Where's the power to do that since there's no change? Right? You know, so even if we're looking at Brahman as Brahman, there's no change, then the whole point is how does he change from the position of, from Brahman into illusion and illusion back to Brahman? So it couldn't happen, so you just stay the way you are. You know? Okay, and then footnote 2. For each word or phrase taken up in Samanvaya Dhyaya, there is a primary and an ultra-primary connotation. The primary meaning refers to things of ordinary experience, aparavidya. The ultra-primary meaning refers to the highest Brahman, paravidya. Right? So we're saying primary in the way of that anything that you're working with or doing in the material world, it has to have something that's functioning behind it, why it can work. Right? Just like in cooking, what's the important element? Right? Heat. Right? Now, whether you put the thing on the heat pole or you put it in a pot or you wrap it up or whatever you do with it, or you cut it into pieces, or you make it into mush, or whatever you want to do, but it's called cooking because you're applying heat. Does that make sense? So like, let's say you're making salad. That's not technically cooking. You know, it'll be in the context of, because it goes along with things that are cooked and uses the methods of cooking, though technically it's not cooked. Does that make sense? So that's then the aspect that you're looking at. So heat or fire here is the primary. But then he says the ultra primary is Brahman, because that's what's actually giving the potency to heat to be actual to able to function in the capacity in your cooking. So your particular cooking is the secondary. The primary is the heat, the ultra primary is Brahman that gives that. Does that make sense? That's why then sometimes it's confusing because it seems there's two positions of primary. But there's the primary within opera vidya, or that which is in support of the transcendental, and there is the transcendental, which is primary. Yes?
So this is usually called physical and metaphysical.
Yes, physical and metaphysical. So here what we're talking about, primary would be the metaphysical. But the ultimate primary is the transcendental. Like that. But within the transcendental, because you have forms, names and forms for the environments and everything of that, then you can consider that secondary. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole principle, is everything's going to go back to this, and then we're just saying he's the supreme, but that goes back to that primary formula of you have Krishna in his completely, so you have Satchit Ananda, right? That's him. But when he's not interacting with his energies, then he's Atmarama. Though all three are present, but they're not being actually technically manifest as such, as in a dynamic way. So when the internal potency is expanded, then you get interaction. Right? Does that make sense? So now what is that interaction going to be based on? There has to be existence, there has to be name, form, relationship, there has to be, and you know, this is how you say it, attitudes are all the qualities that are there. There has to be action itself, there has to be results coming from that action. All that has to be there. But we said it, all that can be in place, but that doesn't attract Krishna's attention. Like it says, the queens of Dwarka don't attract his attention. Right? So, the form of a woman, the position of being wife, the activities that they do, the whole, feminine, what do you call it, graces that they use, all these different things, that doesn't attract him. So what does attract him? It's the bhakti. So in other words, it's the hladini, or the ananda. Because ananda actually means when hladini is being applied. That's why ananda, or ecstasy, is only experienced in the spiritual world. In the material world, then that reflection here then gives what we call happiness and sorrow. Right? And happiness and sorrow go together. In the spiritual world, there's only ananda. So situations that you call happy, then they give ananda. The situation we would call unhappy, they still give ananda. Does that make sense? But the difference is, over there, everything's auspicious. It's just directly and indirectly. Right? So, Mother Yashoda interacting with Krishna in the morning, feeding him and everything, that's direct. It's auspicious. Right? Directly auspicious. But, let's say that the pastime of Kaliya Nag, then those feelings of horror and all these different things like that, that are not primary aspects of rasa, then those are also auspicious, but indirectly, because they bring about full remembrance of Krishna, so the ecstasy of absorption in Krishna, but in that mood of separation or these kind of aspects, then that would be called indirect. But it just generates ecstasy in the spiritual world. Now in the material world, when that's reflected here, then what is directly auspicious, that becomes what we call pious. Right? And what's indirect in the spiritual world, that's what we call impious. Does that make sense? So in other words, when we say the spiritual world, I mean the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, we mean it. It's not just saying that. That's why we can say is that all these things are there. So then, in that, we can see here the same principle that all goes back to Krishna. Then, you have this direct, that means your primary and your ultra-primary aspects, because there's always primary and secondary. Right? But when the whole thing is around transcendence, we don't make the distinction. We just do for study. But for taste, there's no distinction. See, in rasa, you can study rasa. You hear about rasa, you contemplate it, you know, so you get the understanding of it. But actual realization, that's where you taste rasa. Right? So that's where knowledge is complete, at taste. Right? When we say you realize something, that's where you're tasting it. That's where it's important to you. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why coming to that platform of realization is important. Does that make sense? So, let me get into that. Okay, we've given the point, we've explained it, we've given examples. Now it's time for, yeah, you call it, you know, bringing it near. And we can't remember what we were bringing near. We've got so much in. Okay. What did you start? Okay, about the different things. And okay, so therefore it's considered primary, because it's based on prema, and all these other things are supportive. Whatever the prema is, the main thing, everything else is supportive of that prema. Right? So rasa is that what is tasted in that platform of prema. They have love for Krishna, so rasa is tasted based on that. Right? But knowledge-wise, you can analyze, okay, here's Stai Bhav, here's Sattvika Bhav, here's Vyabhichari Bhavs, all these different things. You can study them, get an understanding of them. But it's only through devotional service that it can be taste of them. Right? Because that's based on the Vladini potency. So when the Ananda is in connection with Krishna, then it takes on that primary aspect. So that's what Krishna is, it's about. So even with Krishna, that his grandeur and greatness, that's not primary for him. What's primary for him is love, is that affection that is there between him and the devotees. So there, and that's controlled by the Vladini potency. Because why? Because that gives the ecstasy or prema. Does that make sense? So when Krishna is all these three together, Without it being dynamic, we call it Atmarama. When it's separated and it becomes dynamic, we call it Prema. Does that make sense? So that Ananda, that's what you're doing. So that's what's important. So when it's all together, you don't have to make a distinction, but then there is no material. But when you separate it, then you get the spiritual world and its reflection, the material world. So it's all about the experience that will be gained. So in the material world, the emphasis is always on the names and forms and the getting the results of them. But actually, the experience is what's the real thing. So if we don't get an experience, we don't call it good. But because, let's say, generally people get an experience from a certain thing, then, and because everybody's agreed that that's something nice, then it's considered that that makes you happy. But in reality, it's how you say, it's still all secondary, because it's just about the names and forms. Right? And having the names and forms. Because interacting with people generally is not a primary aspect. It's not considered very important. It's considered kind of, you know, more... That's for people who aren't professional. Professionals don't get emotionally involved in anyone and anything. That's how they're so good. So people who do, they're on a lesser level, since economics is the whole thing. Because with economics, then what can you do? You can buy things that have names. And by having that, you're supposed to be happy. So that's the whole... So it's all about the secondary. So we see the more it gets away from the Vedic culture, the more it becomes focused on the secondary. While the Vedic is trying to bring it to the primary. So here, the primary within Aparavidya, the metaphysical, that's considered spiritual by the modern context. Right? And then there is actual spiritual. Does this make sense? So this is where the formulas are coming from. So it's not that we're just talking about all these different things of philosophy and all that and so many things. That we're talking about one thing, Krishna, and his interaction with his internal potency. So when we deal with Krishna as existence and Krishna as activity, right, it, through the internal potency, then it's called bhakti. That actually gives ecstasy. Right? That gives ananda. But when we deal with Krishna's existence and activities without the internal potency, that's called material. Because then we're accepting Krishna, but not in his completeness. Because the point is why did he expand that we're even here to appreciate it, is because of the Hladini potency. So in other words, if it's not in line with Hladini, it's not spiritual. Yes?
And what's going on with our practice?
With our practice. Well, that means that's what we're trying to do, is bring it in line with that. That's why the recommended activities are there. Because then if we use the recommended activities, it's more easy to appreciate and understand the metaphysical. Right? So then and then from there into the spiritual. So these other higher aspects, the primary is easier to understand from the Vedic, since it's about that. So even your Vedic Brahmins who are scholarly and all this and that, but are materialistic, they understand the metaphysical. So at least there's the principle of understanding the importance of the primary over the secondary. They'll always take primary over secondary. And they'll always see the secondary in relationship to the primary. But they've missed the actual, as used here, ultra-primary, meaning the transcendental position. That they've missed. And so that's, they come up with all these fun philosophies and all that. So the Karmis, the Jnanis, like that. So you can say of all these, then your most prominent will be the impersonal Vedantis and the Karma Mimamsas. Right? So, because they're the ones that take all this to the farthest form, to the deepest. But they'll all accept the metaphysical. And they'll base all of their action and everything and goals on that primary aspect because of Shastra. So they're all theistic. So when we start dropping this for atheistic positions, that it's not based on Shastra, then the difficulty comes up is, where's the metaphysical? If I have a pair of jeans, where's the metaphysical? What's the metaphysical aspect of jeans? Huh?
I like it.
I like it, okay. So I guess that's just okay. You know what I'm saying? While if we look at the other, then that's what Shastra recommends, the unsewn cloth, all these different things that are there. Why? Because of the purity and the simplicity and all these things. So you start seeing these higher metaphysical aspects. That's why it's recommended. So when you say it's not about the secondary, the external... Yes, it's not about that, it's about the primary. But the point is the primary is expressed through the secondary, so if you just say, oh, it's just about devotion, I don't care about what's in between, how do you know you've made a connection at all? How do we know we're just not speculating? How can we say? So you have to be able to take it through back to the original principles. Is that what it says? So that's why then the recommendations are there. That's why it always says we follow the acharyas according to Shastra, according to recommendation. We don't just say, oh, you know, we're transcendental to that. Because if we are transcendental to that, then what's the problem in following it? But since we can't follow it, then we can understand we're not transcendental. We're just using I'm not this body as an excuse to get away with whatever I want. Right? So we're above the rules means, yes, I've always been above the rules as long as I've been in the material world. I always want to do whatever I want. So all it is we put it into language that sounds like it's philosophical, but actually all we're doing is more clearly and nicely explaining that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Like that. So, yes.
Yeah. When Chaitanya,
he
took initiation and in Bhutan, he was teaching his people, you know, about how every word means Krishna. So this is how he was trying to establish the Samanvaya.
How these Lord Chaitanya is explaining all the words as Krishna, yes, because that's how you're bringing out the primary. That's the whole point, is everything's Krishna, then it has its, then from there, because Krishna is the existence of everything, and the potency of action and reaction behind everything, right? So, in other words, he's Sat, he's Chit, right? Radharani is Ananda. Right? It means he's Ananda, but the point is he and his energy are non-different. But when he interacts with his energy, that's when you get Ananda. Otherwise, yes, what do you call it? Atmarama, that's also, you know, happiness, but it's not to the, we don't call it Ananda. We don't call it Prema. So this idea of Brahmananda, the only Brahmananda is absorption of Ananda in service to Brahman, which means devotional service, means the person. But otherwise, what they're talking about, it's Atmarama. There's no real Ananda there. So when the Shastra says Brahmananda, it means devotional service. But they'll take it because it uses the term Brahman as, you know, merging in Brahman. Right? So he is the existence of everything. He is what it can do, what its relationship with everything is, what results it can gain. But the experience then is, if that's based on Haladini, means in devotion to please Krishna, then that gives Ananda. If it's not, then it just gives material happiness and distress. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the basic features, that between the two of them, that's the complete, they're the complete whole. So everything's based on them. Right now, for Krishna to interact with Radharani on that platform, then it's about just tasting. So it's not about controlling and all these different things. Therefore, then through his expansion, then through then through his expansions, that Kriya and Jnana Shaktis are taken care of by Balaram and Vasudev. Right? So then he just interacts with Radharani. Right? And they interact with her expansions on the platform of Kriya and Jnana. Does that make sense?
One devotee, he made a comparison. He said that if you put Atmarama as the Vishaya, and then he expands as Radha Krishna, the Shamshaya, and then Siddhanta would be Mahaprabhu.
No, but why would it be a doubt? See, you know what I'm saying? Is that you have these formulas and they match in a particular thing. So you, you use the terms that go with that particular forms. You know, just like, let us say in mechanics. Okay, I have a car, I have a wrench, and I'm trying to get the car to run nicely. So with the wrench, which is an instrument in the principle of mechanics, I tweak the engine. Right? That'll be commonly, everybody will be comfortable with that. Now if I'm cooking, I don't use the spatula to tweak the vegetables. Right? I turn the vegetables, I fold, I do this. There's other terms that go along with that. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is then here, Shamshaya, then you're saying if what do you say, Krishna is the, who's the Vishaya? Then the doubt, but why is Krishna's a doubt? Because he's the one that's Atmarama. So it's a matter of expansion. It's a matter of whether his energies and all that are just contained within himself, which they are anyway, or they're also simultaneously expanded. So, you know, unless there's some point coming up, because what's the problem with Atmarama? You know, it is a bona fide position. What we're saying is the impersonalists aren't actually Atmarama. That's where we can use it as a doubt. So the point is Krishna is complete in himself as one entity. When he expands as two, then it increases the taste. But what the main taste that's there is the aspect of sambho, because otherwise if there's two, then the taste is being together as one. Though in that, because you can't always do that, there'll be separation. But of that, then the separation is more intense, so it gives an intenser taste. But that intenser taste is then naturally gives a more intense sambhog, right? And then from that more intense sambhog means the vipralamba, separation will be a greater again. So they nourish each other. But the point is it's the vipralamba that then makes the sambhog greater. If being together is so good, it, by the vipralamba it makes it even better. Right? So then, as Lord Chaitanya, then he is taking that position of now, he taking that move of Radharani, so then the Satchit and Ananda are again together in one person, but this time as dynamic. Therefore, given that Krishna is one, then is two, and then is one again. So then, that in the context of Satchit and Ananda, and showing that aspect, then it has some validity, but to put it into this logical thing, it doesn't bring out the... If you're trying to bring out the sweetness and other things, it's not actually the medium, in this case, for it. That's why it's a matter of taking it further. You know, does that make sense? So in other words, if you're saying prema is the perfection of... transcendence. Or, you know, of being transcendentally situated, then that already is saying that prema is higher than Atmarama. And then you may have your doubts about that and this and that, but someone on prema, are they not also satisfied in the self? You know, are they not self-realized in all this? Yes, they are, but then they're seeing their relationship with the Lord rather than just the existence of themselves. You know what I'm saying? Then you can bring up doubts. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why all the different subject matters seemingly are different subject matters. They're technically one subject matter about Krishna. But because they're taking different aspects of Krishna, then fitting the particular situation and application and results of what that subject matter, then it has different names and different actions, even though technically they're all the same. The principle is all the same. They can't be different because it's all Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, then we choose the ones. You know, just like sometimes we say we use synonyms out of context. So that's called chala, where we adjust it. So there's something we're trying to do, but it should be natural. It shouldn't be stretched. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the definitions and the form of it, that should be natural. It shouldn't be that we're having to use a shoehorn or a crowbar to make it fit. You know what I'm saying? You know, you know, by, let's say by yeah. Is that, yes.
So in this case, it would be better to use thesis, antithesis, and synthesis.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to establish. The existence. So we're saying our point is Atmarama. That's the thesis, but we have to prove the thesis. So therefore, Atmarama is proven. Because otherwise, then what we gave is we gave Shamshaya. And then Siddhanta, then the Shamshaya is part of the Atmarama, so you're using Krishna against Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So generally the Shamshaya would be a doubt that would be, you know, how is Krishna Shamshaya for himself in this case? You know, because it's not, because we're not, you know, what is the, because the Shamshaya means another thesis, an alternative thesis. So how is Krishna an alternative thesis to Atmarama, since he's the one that's Atmarama? So what I'm meaning is, you would be discussing this in the principle of, let's say, rasa, or relationships, rather than using this logical form. That's what I'm meaning. So you wouldn't use any of the logical forms. It would be presented, of course, according to logic. But it wouldn't be using those terminologies as creating that relationship between them. In other words, as the basis of the subject matter. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Same thing, like, as you said, that the thesis is Krishna is Atma. Then can you not say, with the help of the example, that when it was a Rasa-lila that was going on, when Radharani called Radharani Krishna and left Radharani also, so just because he is the Atma, basically, that is how we are proving this particular thing, that he is Atma.
That he is Atmaram, yes, but in here he was saying Lord Chaitanya is the Siddhanta, right? You know what I'm saying? He's going from Atmaram to Krishna to Radha and Krishna. Yeah, but the point is why you wouldn't, but the difference is in taste, because he's still Atmaram, like that. So the point is that you, what I'm meaning is, it's not that that formula is not working, but you wouldn't use that definition. You know, it's just like, how you say, Ramanujacharya's guru, he was explaining the eyes, the reddish eyes of the Lord, like the, what it, Kapidvaja, is the back, red backside of a monkey. Not that the color may be exactly the same, but generally we would use a lotus, or the, you know, the sunrise, you know, something more, how you say, poetic. That's what I'm meaning. In other words, since you're dealing with a poetic subject of Krishna, Radha Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya, in other words, in the Atmarama state, then into the dynamic of rasa, and then that, taking that further as Lord Chaitanya, you would use poetic forms rather than this Vedantic form. That's what I'm meaning. Not that the their progression isn't correct. It's just that you wouldn't use those terminologies because they don't exactly match. You know, you could say is, no, here's the color of the sunrise, see here, and here's the color of the monkey's backside. You see, they're exactly the same color. Therefore, calling the Lord's eyes the color of the red monkey's backside is perfectly bona fide. It says, yes, if you're just talking about color or something like that, and it's just a matter of that, but then, you know, who on their color palette has red backside of a monkey as one of the options? You know, it can be... You know, how you say, we have, let's see, what do we have? Okay, we have, what is it? Is it the blue is cyan?
Yeah.
Cyan. So we have baboon nose cyan. We have, how you say, backside of the monkey magenta. And I'm not sure what other weirdo thing we can use for yellow. You know, how you say, so summertime, cold, the mucus, you know, yellow. Huh? Yeah? Okay. You know, so, you know, we're doing this, how you say, wedding card and everything like that. So what colors do you want prominent in this? Yes? Does that make... So that's why it says we would use something else. We would use a different formula. But, like the scholar who didn't appreciate the rasa aspect, for him it was perfectly straightforward. So the whole point is rasa is tasted. It's not intellectualized. We will study rasa. You know, just like before Nectar Devotion does, we saw Acharyas do all throughout, we're going to come across it. So we will study the knowledge of rasa. But we can only taste rasa through our devotional practice. So, does that make sense? So therefore, on the scholarly platform, the some technical form and technical wording and some unique combination, then for the intellect, then that will be considered pleasurable. So then that will give a taste. But rasa is beyond that taste. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you see, the fun part is that if this was brought up, let's say, 5 years ago, we'd just say no or something, or you know, something. But now, because we're getting to this fine point, now we start to differentiate between the tastes and the... Does that make sense? So all these points can come much longer to explain. But at some point, because we're familiar, then we'll see it'll be much shorter. Because we can just refer to something and then it's officially... Because like, now we can say, you know, Shankarshan and this and that. We don't have to go through, 3 days of explanation. Is that okay? Okay. Scheme of Samanvaya in Vedanta Sutra. Oh, I see. The edge was over, so it was catching the bands. The words chosen as the basis for discussion in the Samanvaya Jaya fit into three basic categories, depending on the degree to which they are conventionally connected to Brahman. The scheme for Brahmani Samanvaya, conciliation of text with Brahman, thus far has been as follows. Right? So we may ask why we're getting into this, is that we're now going to establish these things here because in the next adhyaya, that's going to all be about dealing with all the six schools. Right? And so in dealing with these, then all these philosophical ways, the logic, all that will be there. Does that make sense? So, we will, before the next adhyaya, when we finish this pada, then we'll do a short study on these things. We've done it in the past, but do it now so it's relevant for the study. Right? Understanding the logic, how it works, how Mimamsa works, all these different things, how it all combines so that we'll be able to appreciate. Anyatra prasiddha shabdanam. The correlation to Brahman of words and phrases in scriptural passages which, by worldly convention, lokika or vyavaharika jnana, have come to denote things and principles other than Brahman, but which could potentially refer to Brahman, paramartika jnana. At first glance and at the very outset, these are not taken to denote Brahman in their primary sense. Right? Because we will just take them by their secondary form. We won't even necessarily take them by the metaphysical. You know, or so if we're looking at, okay, we'll get back to that, but we'll just take it by whatever is the aspect of what we see, how people commonly use it. Right? So in other words, we'll define it based on the secondary, not the primary. Two, upayatra prasiddha shabdanam. The correlation of scriptural words and phrases which are in an equal position to refer either to Brahman or to other things and principles. So it's used sometimes for Brahman, it's used sometimes for other things. Right? So we have the things that by worldly convention aren't used for Brahman, though they are in a position to be. It's all about Brahman. There isn't anything that's not. But at first glance, we won't take it that way. The other is, it could be Brahman, it could not be Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And anyantrivara prasiddha shabdanam, the correlation of words and phrases in scriptures, which by their established uses have come to be accepted as solely denoting principles and things other than Brahman. Okay.
What is the difference between the first and the third? Because it looks same.
Means at first glance you don't see that, but this is then by their established usage. Each of these three classes above may be subdivided into proper names. Namatmaka shabda, and descriptive terms, lingatmaka shabda. Pada 1 dealt with anyantara prasiddha namatvaka shabdas. Pada 2 dealt with anyatra prasiddha lingatmika shabdas. Okay. Anyatra. Okay, so that was prasiddha. Okay. Pada 3 dealt with upayatra prasiddha shabdas. Pada 4 deals anyatraivara prasiddha shabdas. The order of padas is based on convenience of comprehension. Right? So we're wondering why these things over and over again. This is why, because they're being taken from different angles. Right? As the task of correlating words of the third class to Brahman present peculiar difficulties, it reserved for the concluding pada, right? So that's the point, is that because it's more difficult to establish Brahman through the third principle, anyatraiva prasiddha shabdanam, because basically everybody means the other one is, the first one is, it could mean Brahman, but generally it always means this. That's how people use it. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, okay, the person's new car. Okay, their new car, it's cool. Right? So by popular usage, cool just means something that's very nice. Right? But if you mention is, no, come over here, touch it, the car is cool. Right? And you touch and, yeah, how come it's not hot? You know, it's got some special, you know, thing. Like, then, you know, it can mean, you know, the temperature also. Does that make sense? You know, or person is very attractive, they're hot, right? So that doesn't mean when you touch them, I mean, they'll play the thing, you touch them, they go like this, but at the same time is that then the very high class physical form is when it's hot, but physically it's cool. So actually the hottest people is when you touch them, they're cool. You know what I'm saying? So this is what we're dealing with, anyantra prasiddha shabdanam. So according to what we want, we will use it to our advantage. Does that make sense? Yes.
And then what's the second one? Wouldn't it be the second one?
No, because it's by depending upon who you're dealing with, then it means the one or the other.
So the first one is...
They're all the same thing. It's that the same word has two different meanings.
Yeah.
But one is that by general usage, everybody uses it to mean one thing. But at the same time, if you use it for the others, they're cool with that. Like you see, the arguments in the first one were not so great. Right? In the first pada, were not so great. They would very easily come up and go. Right? Then as we go, they get more and more technical, the arguments. Right? So then in the second one is that it's used one or the other, so what's the context? You don't know. It's not that automatically you just take it. You know, he got a new job. Wow, it's so cool. You know, it's not that, oh, you mean, you know, he's up in the Arctic Circle, you know, like that? And exactly, you know. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So it goes the other way. So depending upon the context, then you use the word. The third one is generally everybody accepts that it means the one thing, but not the other. Tasya Shikaya Madhya. Okay? That he is in the center of the Sika. So, by the term Sika, how do we always use it? You know, yes, the tuft of hair on the back of the head. But Sika also, in its obscure meaning, means the heart, the chitta. So Paramatma is situated in the heart. Right? Does that make sense? So that's then would be this example of the third. Is that in general everyone uses it one way, but it could mean the other way, but there's hardly any time that anybody uses it that way. Right? So generally people use it this way. It could be used, in other words, it's generally used, let's say you have A and B, okay? So A meaning the first, it means the first one then means A is generally how it's used. But, you know, it could be B, but, you know, generally it's A. It's not a problem. B, the second one means it's A or B, depending upon how you're going to use it. It's not generally accepted, it just is a neutral state. And then the third one is that everybody accepts it as B and very rarely as A. You know, it's just that you wouldn't think of it that way. Only as scholarly, then you bring it up. Just like sometimes someone's using a word in a particular way, everyone's using the word in a particular way, and then someone brings up the etymology and says, well, actually, it means something different. Does that make sense?
The second one, this equal position can refer either to Brahman or to other things in principles.
Yes.
The example that we saw in the start, Manomaya, that's the only thing I remember. So like Manomaya, we said that it refers to a principle also, the different koshas, that's how it refers ultimately to Brahman.
Yes, because what is that? What it means, if we have Manomaya, what denotes Manomaya from the, what's introduced at Manomaya that's not in the lower two principles?
Yeah.
Senses are there, ethics are there, all these different things are there. What's being introduced?
Devotion, philosophy.
Devotion, philosophy, duty. Duty's based on the laws of nature. Who is the laws of nature? Yeah. So therefore, he is the Manomaya Purush. But, you know, in general we use it, so, you know, saying, you could even say that's going to be more of the third category. When we say Manomaya, we just take it as our consciousness and conscious of the rules. But actually, the whole principle is that Krishna is what's behind. You know, or it can mean, yes, it can mean the Brahman, or it can mean this. So all we're saying is where the focus is. It's either the focus is more on the worldly, the standard usage, the focus is on, it can be any of so many usages, or it's specifically on one usage that is not seen. You understand? We're not catching the difference between the first and third, because we're saying because it can mean both. But what we're saying is, it's generally the one, but if it's the other, that people can agree with that. Like I said, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, well, the weather today is a little cool, then people don't go, you know, oh, you know, say, so it's such a far out day,
mm-hmm.
You know? You know what I'm saying? You know, there's glitter in the sky. You know, so you understand? So they switch,
mm-hmm.
Though it's predominantly used in one. The other is, it's only used in that way. But technically it can be used in the other way. So then when these passages come and you see the context of everything else is talking about the Lord, but in this context it appears he's talking about the jiva, you would understand it's talking about the Lord due to consistency that's there, because mimamsa means there must be sangati. Right? It has to, that means, in other words, the last verse, this verse, the next verse, there must be this chapter, next chapter, this book with other shastras, and there has to be sangati. Right, that's the last point. And then there's so many aspects of sangati. So all that's why you see so much of the time then we see in defeating these other philosophies, the mimamsa is what he's using. Right? He's using that aspect of that is inconsistent. Does that make sense? Or the greatness that's talked about here is never attributed to the soul. It's attributed to the Supreme Lord always, that we're trying to attribute it to the soul because we want to be great. Does that make sense? Yes.
So the out of the three, the first one will be like conventional meaning.
Yes.
But there is a synonym which is not used as a conventional meaning, but can be used like that.
Even if it's not a synonym. But it's just another form of using. So the third one means generally it's never used in that other way. So people generally always use it the one way.
So my question is about third aspect. Generally in poetry somebody uses it just so that it may mean most of the time the opposite word, what he is saying, just to bring out that
Yes, like that.
Even here we use it for that.
It means all these things are used everywhere because they're literary devices. Just that within logic, then it has to have that thing. The other one, you're going to use it because it feels good, it feels right. But in this, it's not a matter of feeling, it's a matter of this is what it has to be, this is what's going on, because it's how the Lord explains it. The Lord is the scripture, so he is the Veda. So how he's explained it, it has all these various aspects in it. Because he being the complete whole, then all aspects of whatever we're discussing, so here we're discussing language, communication, logical form of it, you know, how people interpret it, all these different, you know, related subject matters. So within that context, then that also is represented in the Lord. So then it has these things. Because when you get into these things, then those who you could say the path of intellectual, you know, contemplation and all that, that path, then the more obscure, then that becomes interesting for them. But at the same time, they're quite comfortable with the conventional because then they know the definition, it goes on. But then when it comes up in one of these others, then it adds, like you were saying, adds a taste, adds like a spice. You can't use it very often, otherwise then it gets old. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is conventional, it doesn't get old because it's just accepted. Anything that's not conventional then has to be used sparingly, otherwise then it becomes conventional. And so first it'll get stale, people will stop using it, and then it'll come back into use, then it'll become the standard. But then, now what is the spice? You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have potatoes, that's the conventional. Then you put some spice, that's the extra, you know, the little difference. Now if I put too much spice, or I always put the same spice, where's the uniqueness? But potatoes, I'm not going to not cook the potatoes. It's not that, hey, we had potatoes yesterday. No, it's we had potatoes with this, so now we're going to change that. Does that make sense? You know, so I'm putting some black pepper on the potatoes, or I'm putting some cayenne pepper on the potato, or paprika on the potatoes, or, you know, like this, you understand? So that's going to be there. But the potatoes, the shmitana, that's standard. That's conventional. And, you know, it's like you're not going to do it any other way. Does that make sense? the Ayurvedic doctor, the local one, he's, you know, invited to Russia. So, you know, he likes going, doing, you know, his doctor stuff, but his complaint is there's only potatoes. There's nothing else. You know, yeah. So like that.
So am I right? And
yes.
The third thing would be with potatoes, like doing some sweets with potatoes?
Yeah. It would be like you take the potato and you know, boil it, mash it, mix it with, you know, sugar and some cream and all that, and put it inside a pierogi. Like that. It's standard. You know, depending on where you're from. For most, it's not. So, when you think of potatoes, you don't think of sweet. But it can be. Or like potato halva. You ever had potato halva? Anyone's had? Really, really good. But most people don't think of potato, you know, potatoes are sweet. So it's just like that. Or like popcorn, do you eat it salty or sweet? Salty, yeah. But like in England, they only had it sweet. So the salty popcorn, they called American popcorn. you know, and the idea of taking popcorn and putting some sugar and lemon on it or things like that, it's just like freaky, or a pancake, right? Americans, you put something, you put, how you say it? You know, some syrup on it, some jam on it, this and that. British will put lemon and sugar, but whole sugar, so it's the grain, so you get the crunch. Like Americans might put powdered sugar, but you don't put whole sugar. It's crunchy, right? It's a pancake. You know, so yes, that's the third. It's there. It's bona fide. Just you don't think of it that way. You know. But the fun part is that you make some other adjustment, then you don't mind. You know what I'm saying? Corn is okay. Corn is salty, okay? Now, when you go out to buy corn on the cob for eating like that, what corn do you buy? Sweet corn. you understand? So, all these things go together, but by usage, then we generally don't mean that. But it could mean that because we think it's very strange. Right? But in like Poland, right, using potato sweet is fairly standard. Like in the cookbook of 1,000 ways to cook potatoes, a lot of them are sweets.
Not sweet potatoes.
No, but these are not sweet potatoes. These are regular potatoes made sweet.
They don't have sweet potatoes, that's why.
Yeah, they don't have sweet potatoes, so they have to make regular potatoes sweet. But even a sweet potato, you'd want to make it more sweet because it's not sweet enough. So technically, you could bake your potato with butter and gore inside. Like you would a pumpkin, but people don't, but you could. And of course, you put sour cream, that goes without saying.
That's convention.
Yeah, that's convention. There is no alternative. That doesn't fit into category three. That's just, yeah, that's, yeah. Okay, overview of pot of four. So we understand why it's going in this order. Right? So then the first one in its standard form, then in linga, what was linga? Descriptive terms. So in other words, in your proper names, the first one was dealt with. In the second pada, then that same technical point, but with its descriptive terms, or in other words, might be more poetic or seem like that. So then in that way they can disturb it. Then the third pada dealt with the second one, and now this fourth pada deals with the third one. So it's because this is the most difficult to understand, because now the discussion we've had for the last 10-15 minutes has been on what is the third one. Right? So that's why it's last. Is that what you're saying? Yes?
And who's going to use that spear meaning or not conventional? They will do or we will do?
The Veda does. So then they will try to use it to their advantage, to use the conventional meaning to mean themselves. Well, then will shows, no, it's using the obscure meaning. Because the point is, the sense transcendence is a secret, it's rahasya. Then using a more hidden meaning is quite a standard thing. Right? You know, so, yeah. You know, it's just, how you say? You know, it's just like... I say, parents, they're talking about something that the kids shouldn't know about, so they'll use hidden meanings. Yeah, different language.
Maybe it's just not Ganesh.
Sorry?
Maybe it's just not Ganesh or something. Lord Ganesh, while writing
the stop Ganesh. Okay, yeah. Could also be, yeah. Yeah. So Ganesh has to sit and think for a while, so he stops so that Vyasadeva can then... So those, I think it's 8,888 verses are done like that. They're so technical and so kind of more obscure that he has to stop. Because the condition was, he said, I will write for you the Mahabharata if you don't stop talking. In other words, you just keep content. You just talk, I just write. Right? Then he said, because sometimes you have to think about things, so Vyasadeva says, okay, that's fine, but you can only write what you understand. So therefore he worked in 8,888 verses that are so technical and like this obscure that he had to stop for a moment to contemplate it before he wrote, and that gives Vyasadeva time to, you know, then think ahead, you know, the verses, so that then he can start speaking again, like that. So you're dealing with extremely qualified people. So yes, that's the, if you ever wonder what's the practical usage, that's the practical usage. So you know, next time you ever need it, then yes, that's the. Overview of Pada 4. As explained above, Pada 4 goes further and brings under the purview of Samanvaya other words which are found to be exclusively connected in scripture with beings and principles other than Brahman, and which cannot, by ordinary means of interpretation, be referring to Brahman. The need for undertaking such an arduous task arises this way. The opening sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, acquired into the absolute truth, Brahman. And the second sutra declared this being as the supreme reality of infinite perfections. The definition of Brahman given in the second sutra is only to illustrate the infinite perfections of Brahman and is not exhaustive of all of them. Right? Now, those may come up in the discussion, but it's already been mentioned. Right? This leaves full scope for the samanvaya of terms from numerous contexts other than that of Brahman's causality in the universe. Right? So up to now we've been saying about his cause. You know, that he's the cause of the universe. But other aspects of the Lord could be brought up. Does that make sense?
What would be the meaning of samanvaya on translation?
So interpreting everything according to Vishnu. Tattu Samanvaya. Okay.
That Vishnu is a point of discussion.
Okay. Where is Tattu Samanvaya?
Fourth one. Shastra to Yomitra to Vishnu.
Okay, and then of the Shastra, then it's about Vishnu. Okay. Tattu Samanvaya. Okay. So we're just building on these. So you have, that's the whole point. The first 11 or first 10, that they establish the whole basis of the discussion. Everything else is going to be basically expanding on those. And even four. So, and we see is that, I think it's Ramanujacharya, his whole commentary is on the first four. He comments on the rest, but you see the bulk is all on the first four. He gave on the first four. Okay. So like that, is that, because in there, because if you say is that Tatsu Samanvayat, it's all about Vishnu, then you basically said everything. Now everything else after that is just going to be showing various ways in which Vishnu is the point of discussion. So then on those four, then it's there. But we see is that it goes through to that, the first 10 or 11, then depending upon who the Acharya is, then they'll bring in those points. So those four become the most important, right? And so that was that Tatsu Samanvayat, everything's Krishna.
So these four sutras were Adhikaran themselves.
Yes. But after that, then it was bigger. Adhikaranas. Okay.
Group of seven.
Okay. Okay. This leaves full scope for the samanvaya of terms from numerous contexts other than a Brahman's causality in the universe, right? Because up to now it's been discussing about how he's the cause of the universe and that he's the one, that he's the unlimited one who's the cause of everything, not the jiva. Does that make sense? Yeah. There's another reason for establishing the samanvaya of anyatraiva prasiddha category of words. The Shrutis say that it is incumbent on us to know that all names and characteristics belong to the supreme reality without any exception whatsoever, and that at the same time, the Supreme Brahman is without flaw. So how everything's meaning him, and at the same time it brings no flaw to him, because otherwise we may be discussing aspects of the material world where it's seemingly there's flaws, so he doesn't become flawed by this. Right? Otherwise, that's one of the atheistic arguments, is that there's flaws in the world, therefore God must be flawed. Right? But they're not seeing the actual principles on which the things are working. So that makes sense. Moreover, such knowledge is indispensable for the attainment of liberation. Right? Because if everything's Brahman, you have to be able to see everything in Brahman, so you don't see anything that's material. That brings you to the transcendental platform. If then certain words offering special difficulties for Samanvaya, like Avyakta, Jiva, Dukhi, Badha, and Pancha Jana, are left out, the principles of Sarva Shabda Samanvaya in Brahman would be carried out only partially and not in its entirety. Right? Otherwise, only the conventional words. See, these things like Avyakta, Jiva, Dukhi, Badha, well, these we generally only refer to, they have their meaning. So when we say Avyakta, we mean the unmanifest. So we're not talking, we generally are talking about that stage in the transformation between Brahman and Mahatattva. But at the same time, is why is it Avyakta? Because of the Lord. So the potency is there. In other words, He is everything like that. So then, and then it, that, so already that's there, the existence of all those elements. They're all there. It's homogenous. That's Him. That's His potency. That's all together. It's His potency that they're separate. But to turn into Mahatattva means that He has to enter into all the elements and make them attracted to each other so that you can actually create the primary creation. That becomes Mahatattva. So we see in all aspects, it's Him, He's the glance. He enters the Avyakta. Therefore, then the Mahatattva then is His primary creation. Then He enters that, you know, it's like as the universal form. So as Virag. So in all stages, so this was, if you remember, is that was the description of the creation by Maitreya to Vidura, because Vidura was, he wanted to get to this, Anyantraiva Prasiddha Shabdanam. He'd already heard it on the conventional platforms. And how, you know, you have Krishna at the beginning and then at the end you have Him there as Antaryami, but what about in between? He wanted to hear that in between. That means then this aspect has to be there. When is that discussed with him? When he already knows the subject matter. So now he can discuss that subtler point. Does that make sense?
What we're saying here, that those terms,
yes,
Yakta-Jiva, they will be used in not a conventional.
No, means these are generally always used and accepted, meaning one thing, that's not the Lord. But what's being pointed out in this pada are these words being used in connection with the Lord. Because now we've defeated these other arguments. Now they'll come down to these. No, but we're saying by conventional thing it means this. And then now have we defeated them all on all those, they're standard stuff. Now they'll go into these more obscure things. So if we're using conventional, then this word here conventionally means this. Jiva means the Jiva. So now, you know, so you can't say it's Brahman, but we're going to show how it's Brahman. Because the point is Tattu Samanvayat. It has to mean Vishnu. Right? So in other words, it can mean Jiva in connection with Brahman. It can't mean Jiva on its own. So everything has to be in the context of Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So once one comes that, one can understand the higher, just like, in other words, that's the more subtle point. So when someone who understands the secondary attributes nicely, the technical, then you can start with them, make the metaphysical appearance. So those who understand metaphysical, you can make the spiritual. That's why it's said that coming to the platform of Brahman, then you can appreciate the person. Because the reason we don't understand Brahman on the conditioned state is because in our mind we are the person. Right? It means that when you throw the rock into the pond, that middle point is us. Right? You know, in reality, it doesn't make sense because we only see our rock and everybody else sees theirs. So if we look, go stand back, it's not.
It says that the name Sarva Shabda Samanvaya. So Sarva Shabda means all the words. Now, how do we determine these words? Because
how can you determine? That's what you see also in if you want to know full detail of that, then study Harinamamrita Vyakarana. Because that shows how all words are Krishna. You know, just like an example, sometimes at the end of a word, there's the there's, it means in the grammar, then there's supposed to be an end there, but it's dropped, right? But the word functions in that particular way because there's the end. But through the grammatical laws, it's been dropped. But it still functions in that particular way only because the end has been added. So now, why does it function the way it functions? Because of the hidden aspect of Krishna. So Krishna is the end. Krishna is what makes the transformation of that word. You understand? But it's hidden, you don't see it. You understand? So in principles, it's also, you have, you know, so many things like the E at the end is silent. But because the E is there, you pronounce it in a particular way. If the E wasn't there, you say it differently. So that's one of the aspects, you know, of Krishna within grammar, where it's hidden. You understand? You know, and French use a lot of these.
So this particular, the last aspect of Anyatra Eva, is unique to mostly Vedantic.
You could say Upanishadic, because the Vedanta is the study of Upanishads. What is the essence of the Upanishads? In other words, you're taking me. The Upanishads are giving a. Giving the essence, and it's giving it in the Vedic style, but it also has the aspect of logic to it. But just taking out just the logic, leaving the stories, that you get Vedanta Sutra. You know, so that's why the Upanishads are Shruti Prasthan. And this is Nyaya. In other words, the logic that's given, because the Upanishads have a story and a discussion. So leaving all that and just taking the logic of the point being presented, that will be a Vedanta Sutra.
Speaking from the context that this particular ways of seeing is not anywhere seen in other religions. They have a very great difficulty to deal with this aspect of Lord.
How many deal with Upanishads as the basis of religion?
Right.
And how many are trying to get to the essence? Most are dealing with the secondary, right? I worship God, what's going to happen? Right? My health's going to be good, my family's health's going to be good, we're going to have plenty of money, we're going to be prestigious, everything's going to be fabulous, all my enemies will be destroyed, you know, everything will be great. Right? And that's why we worship God. Right? So, am I interested in the metaphysical? Am I interested in the transcendental? No. But I'm theistic in that I accept God is the one who does all this stuff. In other words, piety comes from God, I follow it, God's happy, I get what I want. But it's not about God. You know, the person, it's just about God, that position. So it's not personal, actually. You know, I accept that he's a person, but at the same time, he's not a person. So it's a material concept.
And even as devotees also, like, we mostly try to avoid those aspects, which is difficult to kind of leave them behind and then we just go.
Yes. Hence, the study of philosophy is not that popular. But if you'll notice that when devotees study management, which seems to replace philosophy, do they study the metaphysics of it? No. Or the transcendental connection? No. Otherwise, why does management work? Point is if you want to say, okay, let us take the Brudge pastimes. Who is the manager? Yoga Maya is there. Right? She's managing the whole thing. So we're not taking it back to there. So why is she doing that? For Krishna's pleasure. So that means then the jnana and kriya aspects all have to be there under then haladini. So therefore then it becomes bhakti. Right? When kriya is mixed with haladini, then it becomes bhakti. If it's just kriya without that, then how is it? If I just have ananda, I'm going to be happy. Brahmananda, then it's not bhakti. Sahajas, I'll be so happy. It's not bhakti. Has to be action with that, and the action has to be based on knowledge. So these points aren't discussed. So therefore, then that's why every so many years they have to use a new school of management. Well, in the Vedic, you can use the same thing. In fact, you could take the treatise, if you want to take Western management, take that treatise by On War by Clausewitz. Right? That's written in the 1800s. Like that, you know. So in the European thing, Clausewitz, Jomini, these are the two authorities in this. Does that make sense? So then in this, then I'm not sure. I think Jomini support somehow or another was the Russian czars, they used his formulas more. But the point is you could take that and apply that now. In Japan, they outdid the Western world in economics so easily, they used Musashi, which goes back to the 1700s also. Which goes back 100 years before that. Actually, he goes back to that. Yeah, they're going back to that. You know, in China, they use, you know, Sun Tzu. That's 2,500 years ago. In India, they use Arthashastra. It's also 2,500 years. So the point is this idea is that you have to keep updating and changing. That's because they actually don't know the science at all. They know only enough to apply it as an art. So they're studying the art. We're interested in the science. You know the science, then you apply the art to it. Otherwise, if you only apply art, then it keeps changing, and then they keep changing words and this and that until something totally gets lost, and then someone else will see what's missing now and then bring that up. That's the next new school. So in other words, I take, okay, I have A, B, C, and I present A, B, C. It's not working because D's not there. Then I make this whole thing about D. And then that's the new school, ABC, who cares about that? And then with time as it goes, then it solves certain problems because people are still functioning on ABC. But now they focus on D, but with time the people that are new people are trained are only functioning in D. They don't know ABC, so now there's the system falls apart again. Someone sits around and goes, hey, we're missing ABC. Or we're missing A. Someone else, you know, like that. And so that's all they're doing. It's just speculation. So it can be engaged, but in one sense it's a waste of time as if you're being scientific. If you're being intelligent, it's a waste of time. So you understand? So the point is the science is there. You know the science, it works. So the point is in the Vedas, the Upanishads, it gives the science of how the philosophy works. You based on that, that's you could say real, or you could say that is... your best form of theism, like that. All other forms of theism will have aspects of it, but you could say the Upanishad would be the most complete. But it only becomes real theism when it's about the Supreme Lord, about Brahma. Then you can say, now it's come to the actual problem. Does that make sense? And that, when you understand it with devotion, then you can say. So you can just keep going until you get the prema. Once you get the prema, then you know, of course, then Lord Chaitanya Ramana and Dharai, they can keep going till you get to Madana Nayaka Mahabhav with Radharani. Then, okay, now the discussion is, we're good. Okay? So that's the whole thing you have to be able to appreciate, is that the Upanishadic form, the Vedic form, uses obscure vocabulary. So it's not an uncommon thing, but because people are using it, they will use things in a standard way. Right? You know, it's just like, just for an example, Brahman. Everything's Brahman. Okay? We're using it quite comfortably now, because Tattu Samandvayat. Right? But go back some years, everything's Brahman, that's a Mayavadi thing, and we're supporting that. Right? Because we're just using that conventional method there. But when we get into the subtle, then we see it's all Brahman. The problem is the Mayavadis don't actually see everything as Brahman. That's why they're called Mayavadis. They're preaching Maya. So that's why you make a distinction between them and Brahmavadis, who preach Brahman. And then Brahman, then coming to that platform, you go to the next stage, then it's Bhagavan. So we're Bhagavanvadis. That includes Brahmavadis. The Maya bodies, that, you know, that's nobody bodies.
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda ki.